Hello and welcome once again to the Blueprints. This is Canada's Conservative Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Schmale, Member of Parliament for Halliburton, Forth, and Lakes Brock. Thank you once again for joining us. Lots to talk about. And with this content, we ask that you like, comment, subscribe, share this program, help us push back against that ever-moving Liberal agenda. Of course, if you can't watch or listen to it right now, you can download it. Listen to it later on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. It is out there. Today, Erin O'Toole announced his new shadow cabinet. You can check out the link at conservative.ca. One of those ministers is coming on the show here today, a familiar face and a good friend of the show, Andrew Scheer, Member of Parliament for Regina Capel. He's also the shadow minister for infrastructure and communities. Welcome back again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Jamie. Always great to come on your show so we can discuss very important issues that are facing Canadians.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you for your ongoing support of this show. You've been a great supporter and someone I really appreciate. So I want to start right off because so much has been happening. Let's start with COP26. So I'll just read the headlines here. CTV News headline, Trudeau moves on to pledge a cap to oil and gas emissions. And it goes on, capping oil and gas emissions in Canada. What? That doesn't stop demand. What happens?
Well, what it means is that other countries will fill the void that Canada is going to create with their products. And when we think about those other countries, we can look at places like Saudi Arabia, like Venezuela, like Algeria, and our largest trading partner, but also our competitors, the United States. And what Justin Trudeau has effectively announced is a one-sided double standard where he has attacked Western Canadian oil and gas. He has not said that any other industry in this country is going to have a hard cap. And he's basically telling the Western provinces that you can't grow, that you're not going to have that economic growth that we come to expect in our country. And it's pretty devastating. It's been a gut punch here in Saskatchewan. And as you can predict, you know, our Premier of Alberta have come out very aggressively against this. Our Saskatchewan caucus has all come out very aggressively about this. It just makes no sense for him to single out and attack Western Canada and Canadian oil and gas the way that Justin Trudeau has.
Well, we can still import oil on our East Coast. Yeah.
Well, that's the part of this where like I actually have like I have a physical reaction. Like I get so frustrated that sometimes like it hurts that in addition to being grossly unfair and treating Western Canada just so horribly, it also makes no sense because you're absolutely right, Jamie. Not only will global markets be filled by our competitors like Saudi Arabia and the United States, but our own domestic markets will. We have refineries in Eastern Canada, most notably in St. John's, New Brunswick, that are supplied by foreign oil. The refinery in St. John's in New Brunswick is primarily fed, a huge intake of their source is from Saudi Arabia. And what we're saying is that, no, you'll never get a west to east pipeline now under Justin Trudeau. We'll never be able to build a Western a pipeline that takes Western Canadian energy to displace that foreign oil. What he's basically telling Canadians is we're going to be sending Canadian dollars overseas. We're going to make Saudi Arabia stronger and Canada weaker by buying their energy instead of keeping our dollars here at home, putting Canadians to work, investing in Canadian infrastructure and benefiting Canadians' retirement savings and pension plans that are all invested in Canada's energy sector. We're saying all of that is going to get, Trudeau's saying all of that is going to get weaker and other countries are going to get stronger because of this policy. It just makes no sense.
So did I somehow miss the memo that Saudi Arabia all of a sudden, the Nicaraguas and all the others suddenly went green, suddenly got better in their labor practices and their environmental standards? Did I miss something that somehow Canada's fallen behind?
Well, if you missed it, then so did I, Jamie, because there's no indication ever that these countries take any of the same approach when it comes to issues as it relates to the environment, or as you rightly point out, human rights. You know, we look at Saudi Arabia and we see what they do to women, what they do to religious minorities. We see what happens to people who speak out against the regime. These are horrible human rights abusers, and yet Justin Trudeau's world, it makes total sense to send Canadian dollars overseas to purchase their energy, make them richer, allow them to invest in their military, allow them to have a higher quality of life for their citizens, and literally enriching the royal family of Saudi Arabia. You know, there's all kinds of stories about how they amass massive amounts of money. And Justin Trudeau thinks it makes sense for you to pay $1.50, $1.75 a liter so you can send that overseas. The other countries must be laughing at Canada right now. You know, it's no other country in the world would do this to themselves, would kneecap themselves at the and make their competitors better off. Look at Joe Biden in the United States. I mean, this administration has been very, very difficult for Canada. Not even a year into it, first thing he did was cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. We've had issues with Line 5, and now Joe Biden goes out to the world and begs these countries that are human rights abusers to increase production of oil and gas to fill the American consumer market. Hey, guess what, Mr. President? We are your largest trading partner. We are your NATO ally. We have similar standards when it comes to the environment, labor law, protection of human rights. And oh, by the way, we have a vertically integrated economy where your suppliers help our development and vice versa. We could supply your energy needs, but we've got a president of the United States that it talks down and attacks Western Canadian energy, and then we have a prime minister that does it too. So it's really putting us in a very difficult spot in Canada. That's why you're seeing some of these comments coming from Western Canada, really questioning what to do when you're part of a country that just treats us so terribly and not only doesn't seem to care about the difficulties that we're going through, but is the cause of the problem that's creating so much hardship out here. When your own federal government is attacking you, it makes it very, very difficult.
Absolutely, because as you pointed out, it's not market forces that is causing this to happen. It is the boot of government on the neck of the industry. And it really is amazing. We regulate our ports to no end. We hamper development in our own country. And not only oil and gas, look at the mining sector, look at lumber. That was having problems prior to COVID. And now we've seen what happens after the pandemic if it's not dealt with properly. So there are some major anchor industries in our economic powerhouse that are just on their knees right now. And these are, like you said, providing real jobs, real opportunity, more wealth for Canadians that we just somehow are kneecapping ourselves unnecessarily.
Yeah, you're so right, Jamie. And, when we were approaching the environment and natural resources going in the 2019 election, one of the things that really helped guide our environmental policy was the basic understanding of a couple of things. First of all, the percentage of greenhouse gas emissions that are there because of human activity. So that's a certain percentage. And then you take the percentage of that Canada contributes, and you start dealing with a percentage of a percentage of a percentage. And looking at that economic cost here in Canada, the misery that some of these draconian measures will cause here at home versus the amount of reductions that will actually be achieved, you have to approach that through that lens. The second thing you have to do is you have to look and see what other countries are doing, because we could shut everything off. You know, every Canadian could agree that we're going to shut everything off for a month. We're not going to drive. We're not going to heat our homes. We're not going to run our refrigerators. We could shut everything off in Canada. And, you know, China's emissions, would dwarf us in a matter of weeks, you know, a matter of days. So we have to have that in mind, because a molecule of CO2 doesn't need a passport to travel around the world. And if China is emitting these massive increases in CO2, then for Canada to kneecap ourselves, it won't have any impact. All we're doing is we're going to be displacing, you know, that production is going to leave Canada, where it's held to an environmental standard. You know, we say to countries who are mining or developing oil and gas or manufacturing here, you must adhere to these environmental standards. Well, if we chase them away and we say, hey, great news, Canada's reduced its emissions by, you know, so many tons of CO2, we say, okay, well, now that production's taking place in China without those environmental standards. And now instead of maybe 10 tons of CO2 on a weekly basis, now it's more like 20. We're actually worse off. So our approach was to combat global emissions and to start to say, what can Canada do here? If we took a unit of production away from China, as it relates to, for example, aluminum, our aluminum industries in Quebec and in other places, they have access to clean hydropower. So the CO2 emissions for producing a ton of aluminum is much, much lower in Canada. In China, they run their electricity off of coal-powered electrical plants. So we can actually lower emissions by producing more here. The global levels would be reduced. Canadian emissions would you know, our own domestic policy can leverage our clout to lower those global emissions. But unfortunately, Justin Trudeau is, you know, ideologically bent. This is like this government is like an NDP campus club at a university, you know, in power. Just, you know, don't bother them with the facts. Just all the stuff that works on paper that never works anytime it's been tried. This is what they're actually doing, and it's pretty scary. You know, we can laugh and we can make jokes about it a little bit, but it's a little bit of gallows humor here in Saskatchewan, because we see the impact, we see the layoffs, we see the steel plant here in Regina being basically idle for the past few months, and it's sad and it's affecting people's lives and livelihoods. And we've got a prime minister who just keeps putting salt in the wounds.
Absolutely. And when you see article after article talking about price increases for oil and gas, when you're seeing warnings about shortages this winter, when people might actually have real problems heating their homes in the dead of winter, that is very concerning. But yet, as you pointed out, we have the supply here. Why rely on others? It just makes no sense. I can't figure it out either.
Yeah. We had a proposal. We had a proposal a few years ago for Energy East, and Energy East would have brought Western Canadian energy to Eastern Canadian refineries. It would have created jobs and opportunities all across the way. Now, the project proponent pulled out. Why? Well, because Justin Trudeau rigged the system. The approvals process was changed to force the pipeline proponent to account for all upstream and downstream emissions. And basically what that means is that any amount of CO2 that gets emitted in the extraction of the oil and gas, or any of the CO2 that's emitted after the product reaches the refinery, has to be accounted in the pipeline. No other industry in Canada is faced for that. You know, the auto sector, the manufacturing plants in Ontario don't have to account for the CO2 that's caused by the creation of the raw materials that go into a vehicle. They certainly don't have to account for the CO2 that vehicle puts into the air after it drives off the lot. This was targeted specifically on our energy sector, specifically to attack Western Canada. No other industry in Canada to face it. So the project proponent pulled out. So as a result, those Eastern Canadian refineries don't have access to Canadian energy. As you pointed out, we have it here. We've got natural gas, we've got conventional oil, we've got oil sands oil, we've got lots of deposits of those types of things. Propane's gone through the roof, gas prices are through the roof, and we have a prime minister that, rather than tackles that, is going to make it worse and is making, you know, the people he made happy after that announcement in the UK were China, because China doesn't have to sign on to anything, and our economy is going to be tougher to invest in, tougher to attract jobs and growth. So China is a big winner, and as I mentioned, our competitors when it comes to oil and gas, that demand is going to be filled. Now it's not going to be filled by Canadian ethical energy. It's going to be filled by either countries that aren't always aligned with us, some countries that are outright hostile to us, or countries like the United States, where we've got a good relationship, but we're also competing very, very, it's a very competitive marketplace right now in North America, because the United States is yes, a friend, yes, a trading partner, but we have to have a compelling reason for people to invest in Canada versus the US. And right now we have a prime minister that's making it harder to invest in Canada.
Do you think it's because Justin Trudeau will never feel the effects of this? Like, he's independently wealthy, and there's nothing against his wealth. I'm not picking on that. I'm just saying, no matter what he does, you know, taxes go up here, the price of gasoline goes up here. It will never affect what schools his kids go to, or what car he drives, or what house he lives in. He is just above that pricing system. So he just is able to lecture us on everything.
Absolutely, Jamie. I mean, it's rules for thee and rules for me. You know, he has this attitude. He's never, you know, remember when he attacks small businesses, this is very telling. He went after small businesses, called them tax cheats, and tried to take away the tools that small businesses use to weather downturns in their economic cycle, to save, to grow, to put a little bit of money away for their own retirement because they don't have pension plans or government guaranteed salaries. When Justin Trudeau attacked all those different types of entrepreneurs and small business owners, he protected. He did not include trust funds. So he's always very careful to make sure that when he's making these public policy changes, that he's protected from it. He called his own family fortune a vast family fortune. We know he's very wealthy, and like you say, you know, there's nothing wrong with having wealth. But when you are protected from the impacts of your policies and you are completely uncaring, when people talk to him, when members of parliament raise issues on behalf of their constituents, and we say hardworking people who don't have lots of money in the bank, who don't have a family fortune, who aren't going to sit on a bunch of inheritance money, they literally cannot put fuel in their vehicle and put food in their fridge. And when he is so uncaring about that, it's because he's protected from that reality. Absolutely, you know, when was the last time you think Justin Trudeau paid for a tank of gas, you know, and he wouldn't notice it. The grocery prices could triple and he wouldn't notice. Margaret Thatcher used to famously say, you know, the leader of the country should always know what the cost of a pint of milk is. And it was that kind of connection with real people facing real concerns, everyday concerns that really helped Margaret Thatcher lead Britain through some very difficult periods and emerge stronger and more powerful and with a better economy and a better quality of life, having those free market principles applied. And she grew up in a grocery store. You know, her father was a grocer. Justin Trudeau grew up in the spotlight. He inherited a bunch of wealth. He's never had to worry about that. So absolutely, I do think there's a connection between Justin Trudeau being out of touch and pursuing policies that are going to make life miserable for millions of Canadians.
All right, let's talk about infrastructure now. I could go on about this for a while because we can talk about how we wanted to incentivize those to develop. Actually, let's talk about this before we move on because that way it kind of rounds out the conversation. When we talk about technology and innovation, we have very different ideas than the Liberals on that. We want to accelerate that. We want to have rapid innovation by leveling the playing field, stopping barriers to competition, allowing the best product or service to rise to the top. But when you have governments picking winners and losers in certain markets, you have innovation that really slows down to what the government wants. And sometimes they get it right, often they get it wrong, but you really don't improve people's lives in quick order.
No, 100%. The advancements in technology that have led to an amazing quality of life. I sometimes remind my kids what life was like when I was young, like in my lifetime. And I can hear my dad talking when I do it and kind of cringe a little bit and say, oh my gosh, I'm saying the same things to my dad, you know, back when I was a kid. But my kids asked me the other day, why we say hang up the phone? Because it makes no sense to them. And where does hang up the phone come from? And I realized, like, oh my gosh, they have never had one of those wall units with a cradle on it.
The cord and everything. Yeah.
That's right. You know, so that made me think about in my lifetime, how far we've come. You can be on the other side of the world, meeting up with a friend, deciding what restaurant you're going to go to. You can be Googling where to eat in a faraway city. And if you're 15 minutes late, you can text your friend, say, hey, I'll just miss my subway or whatever. I'll be there in 15 minutes. That is new. That is so new in my lifetime. When we were kids traveling, you know, if you missed an appointment, you maybe got a hold of them in the evening and explained it. There's no way to rapidly get a hold of anybody. My point there is that nobody could have predicted the smartphone, the hyperconnectivity, things being stored on the cloud, the ability to pull up a QR code in another country, and all this has happened because of innovation. It's foolish to think that the government can predict these types of things. Companies can't predict it. Individual human beings can't predict it. Nobody can. These things happen because of human ingenuity and because of the principles of the free market system, which is, you know, investing and making a profit and providing a service that people want. So this is a rambly way of saying, you're absolutely right. The conservative approach is to recognize what facilitates innovation in general. Well, it's the ability for people to take risks and then get the benefit from that risk. So competitive taxation, knowing that if you invent something in Canada, if you have a patent in Canada, that you can earn a profit off that. That's a huge incentive. Making sure that we have the talent, you know, so making sure that we have skills and training programs that are accessible to everybody. That's also part of it. So you've got the human resources and you've got the competitive tax regime. And if having innovative policies like tax breaks for new patents, those are the types of things that conservatives look at to foster innovation. But we don't know where that's going to come from. What the Liberals try to do is they try to pick it. They establish a committee, you know, and they try to pick winners and losers. They created these super clusters where they doled out big bucks in certain regions because they thought that this would all lead to massive amounts of innovation and better, you know, improvements in delivery and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't happen because government's not good at doing anything, certainly not good at predicting the future. And this is the biggest problem. This is why Liberal big government efforts to ramp up innovation are always less effective and less efficient than having some free market principles in place that allow other people to do what they do best. Because you know what? There's 1,000 failures, you know, that there, if we think about why the iPhone became kind of the standard. Well, if we think back, there were dozens and dozens of other companies trying to do the same thing, trying to have, you know, products that people want, and the best kind of emerge from it, and consumers make up their mind and make their own decisions. So you need to have that competition amongst the innovators. There's going to be 999 ideas that don't go anywhere and one idea that does. That's how innovation works. The government can't look at 1,000 options and say, this is the horse we're going to bet on. It's like buying a lottery ticket. You might as well, you know, the government, finance minister would be better off going down to a lottery store and buying a bunch of tickets, because you have as much chance of being right on your lottery numbers as you would being the government trying to predict where the innovation is going to come from.
I often refer to the Back to the Future model when I think it was the ending of one going on to two. Doc Brown comes over and starts picking through the garbage and getting a bunch of stuff and putting it in the Mr. Fusion. Mm-hmm. And that just somebody came up with that idea, right? Like, you never know what's going to happen. Somebody around the world could say, I have a Mr. Fusion. This will revolutionize how we power our vehicles, our homes, our businesses, etc.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing, like what kills me about government is that the private sector, the free market, individual Canadians or people in general around the world, they apply their intelligence to a problem. They come up with a solution, or a solution kind of evolves or emerges. And then government looks at that and says, well, now we need to regulate it, or now we need to tax it, or now we need to replicate it. So, you know, we have the internet, we have things like social media platforms, pros and cons to having hyper connectivity and people being able to speak. And then the government comes and looks and says, well, now we need to regulate it. Now we need to have a whole bunch of things. And they never seem to look at how the innovation happens and understand how to replicate the conditions. They always try to say, well, if we fund the right company, if we give the right company a bunch of cash, then that company will be able to do this. And then, you know, we'll have that innovation. And it's never happened that way. TVs, for example, in the year I was born, 1979, a brand new top of the line TV would cost you about the same as 2 weeks. It was about the same as 2 weeks average salary for the average worker in Canada. So it would take two months, I think it was. Double check my math on this because I haven't used this proof point in a while. But the point is, it took a while to save up to buy a brand new TV. Now we look at a brand new TV, orders of magnitude better, you know, like flat screen, high, ultra 4K. You can connect all kinds of things to it. I can stream stuff from my smartphone onto my TV. It is massively a better product for relatively either, you know, depending on the model, you can get them for a few days wages now. You know, the average worker could work for 4 or 5 days and pick up what he would have to work for 2 months for and get a much better product. None of that happened because of a government department. None of that happened because there was a minister of technology.
Of cool TVs.
Yeah, of cool TVs who said, you know, how can we have a better... None of that happened because of that. What happened was competition. You had certain manufacturers of television wanted to offer a better product than others. So they came up with the remote, or they came up with a way to have a better picture, or they had, you know, and by doing that, that forced the other companies to say, okay, well, they just came up with a remote. We better have a better remote or an easier to use remote. Or
people seem to like this.
Yeah, whatever. And then over time, that competition produces a much better product at a much better price, and we all benefit from that, you know, and that's the part of our the Conservative Party's free market principles that is so frustrating, that the mainstream media, that the other political parties just they ignore. Because it's not like this is theoretical, Jamie. It's not like we're sitting in a poli-sci class 101 or an economics class and we're having a theoretical esoteric conversation about what might work or what might not work. The empirical evidence looking back at every point in time is when you have free market principles, you have plenty, you have growth, you have higher standards of living. When you have government control, government intervention, and socialism, you have misery. It's everywhere. It's been tried. It's been proven to be true. So it's like, it's frustrating.
Yeah, but the next time it'll be right.
Yeah.
We'll get it right the next time. That wasn't, it was just the wrong people. Super smart people weren't in charge.
Well, right? you must have heard this a lot too. How many times have you heard from really, you know, radical left-wing people who now more and more are members of the Liberal Party of Canada? Yeah. I mean, but they'd say, you know, communism works. Yes. It just hasn't worked in practice. You know, it works in theory, but it just doesn't work in practice. Well, I know of no other theory that when tested fails, still gets to call itself a theory. You know, if Einstein had a theory of relativity that every time it was tried failed, well, we wouldn't be talking about it 100 years later. You know, it would just be relegated to the footnotes of scientific history, you know. It doesn't work because it doesn't take into account basic human nature. And that's the frustrating part with watching the Liberal governments retry things that have been tried decades and decades and decades throughout our country's history. And every time they're tried, they fail.
It's like the people in the government class believe we're all pieces on a chessboard that they can move around because they know how to work our lives better than we do.
That's right. Exactly.
It's extremely frustrating. You know what? I completely ran out of time. I was going to talk about infrastructure. I will maybe end with this. I always give the guests a closing comment, but I will say the funniest, one of the funniest tweets I saw come out of COP21 was your former minister that you were shadowing, Catherine McKenna, who flew to Glasgow, Scotland for that conference and then immediately took part in a Zoom meeting while she went to a climate conference. I thought she could have probably done that from her living room. But anyway, maybe you can close out quickly, talk about the infrastructure bank and what a horrible failure that is. And again, wasted tax dollars. Here we go.
Yeah, I found dealing with the infrastructure bank one of the most, again, very frustrating files for many of the same reasons we've been talking about. It was announced today that I'll be continuing in my role as Shadow Minister for Infrastructure. So I really want to keep digging into this because this is a massive scandal that's happening in full view. This isn't like normally when opposition parties find out about Liberal scandals, it's usually because of access to information request or because of a whistleblower. This is one that they're actually doing in plain sight. They're making all these announcements publicly. The Canadian Infrastructure Bank was supposed to take some taxpayers' dollars and unleash a whole bunch of private sector dollars to get infrastructure built to the benefit of Canadians. So it was supposed to get roads, bridges, ports developed using private sector money to be able to do more because there's limited government resources, but you've got bigger pools in the private sector. So good goal, terrible way to do it. The conservative approach of having the P3 model was the effective way that actually got private sector investment into building these types of things. But anyway, we were willing to, you know, willing to see where the Canadian Infrastructure Bank went. What they've turned into is a massive corporate welfare machine. This bank, the Parliamentary Budget Officer blew the whistle. Not a single dollar of private sector investment had been committed before the election, certainly not to projects that were underway. And so no private sector money. It's all different levels of government putting money in. And just before the election, they had a number of announcements where they're basically giving cash to already massively profitable companies. So energy sector companies that have billions of dollars worth of cash, of profits, are getting a subsidy now from taxpayers to help help them build more projects. So it's completely flipped on its head. It's instead of getting new infrastructure built to improve our quality of life, they're now underwriting private sector projects where the shareholders and the CEOs and the boards of directors, they all benefit from the taxpayer money. Individual Canadians don't.
Not even going into the Asian Infrastructure Bank. Asian Infrastructure Bank. Pipelines in China.
Asian Infrastructure Bank. Justin Trudeau thought it was a good idea to take $250 million, $250 million of Canadian tax money and give it to the to a bank basically controlled by China to build infrastructure projects around that region that allows China to increase its influence. So the infrastructure bank is actually, the Asian Infrastructure Bank is actually helping China expand its influence in that region. And Canada's, Justin Trudeau has sent your tax dollar to help them do it. And it was announced last year that one of the projects that the Asian Infrastructure Bank was funding was a pipeline project. So he says no to Canadian pipeline projects, cancels and vetoes Energy East and Northern Gateway, throwing thousands of people out of work, but he'll send your tax dollar. You know, some of those workers whose severance checks got taxed, some of that tax money ended up in a bank in Asia to build projects in other countries and help the Chinese expand its influence. It just, like, if the mainstream media just focused for a few minutes of every day on these types of things, I think Canadians would have a better understanding of just how terrible this Liberal government is.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm going to have you back on the show to talk about this infrastructure bank. That was supposed to be the topic today.
Yeah.
And we just went on a roll there. It was great. I loved it. And I can't believe the time. We're way over. So I do appreciate that. And like you said, the mainstream media, if they reported honestly, this wouldn't be hidden or not talked about at all, because I can guarantee you, if you know, under Stephen Harper, if this happened, under you or Aaron O'Toole, if this ever happened, there would be massive outrage in the media. They would be hyperventilating everywhere you go.
Oh yeah. There is definitely a double standard there. And that's why these types of shows, you know, you said at the top of the show, you know, like, share, and subscribe. I really encourage people who are watching this to do that. Share the content with your friend. I know so many people who are conservative who have a basic awareness that what the Liberal government is doing with some of these issues is not good, but they don't know where to get their information from. And so I encourage people all the time. There's great members of parliament with great shows like this. There's outlets like the True North and Post Millennial that cover some of these types of issues. And you know, rather than sitting down watching some of the mainstream media and you know, having their ratings go up because you're watching them, do yourself a favor, watch shows like this. This is where you can get, at the very least, you're going to get another perspective to help you make up your mind. And you're probably going to learn a thing or two that the mainstream media just doesn't even cover.
Couldn't agree with more. Andrew Scheer, Member of Parliament for Regina Capel, also the new Shadow Minister, or newly reappointed Shadow Minister for Infrastructure and Communities. Congratulations. And I recommend you listen to his advice. Like, comment, subscribe, share this program. There is somebody in your social media network, as Andrew just pointed out, that might be open to this message. This is a way to do that. And if you can't watch or listen to it now, tell them you can download it at platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. It is out there. Thank you very much for joining us. New content every single Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll get Andrew back to talk about that infrastructure bank. Lots more to unravel there. Until then, low taxes, less government, more freedom. That is The Blueprints.